hello and welcome, Magic folk, to This Week in MTG, your aggregate news podcast for all things Magic the Gathering. In this special bonus episode, we won't be discussing the usual news. Instead, we have something even more exciting in store for you. Anthony and I had the honor and privilege of interviewing Dylan and Cam from Play to Win YouTube channel and podcast. If you're not familiar with their work, these guys have made a significant impact on the MTG community with their CEDH gameplay videos, and through their podcast, they offer detailed breakdowns and their strategic insight of the format, quickly becoming juggernauts in this space. And of course, in typical This Week in MTG fashion, we dive into who Dylan and Cam are, what music they listen to, and how they approach tabletop play and deck building. So whether you're a longtime follower of Play to Win or just want to learn more about the personalities behind the screen, sit back, relax, and enjoy as we talk to listen. Sorry for the joke. Roll the episode.
Welcome to This Week in MTG with your hosts, Matt, Danny, Anthony, and Big G.
Hello and welcome, Magic folk, to another episode of This Week in MTG. This one is a special interview episode again with the Play to Win guys. Holy shit, not gonna lie, that was exciting to hear that that got locked in.
Oh yeah.
So stay tuned and be excited for this. So we'll pass it over to you. Here we got with us, introduce yourselves, guys.
Hello, I'm Dylan.
And I'm Cam.
We are from Play to Win. We are a CDH YouTube channel and podcast. We make CDH content, gameplay, podcast, shorts, stuff like that. Post every week. Thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
He hit all of the notes super well.
Very well. It's like you guys have done this before a time or two. You guys have been around here doing a Play to Win for a while. How long has Play to Win been a channel?
That's kind of crazy to say, but yeah, we have. It's been like 4 years.
Yeah, we won in February 2020 is when we started.
Yeah, February of 2020 is when we started, which was very strange timing. But yeah, it's been over 4 years now. It's wild. We've been around for a bit.
Would you argue that that timing was actually very good, because everyone was then like looking for more content because they're inside, and like, yeah. I don't know, maybe you guys will definitely know, be able to answer this more than us because you're in that realm more. But at the start of the pandemic, like, people were getting into Commander way more and they're just looking for more of that content. So you guys, at least in my view, it definitely seems like you got in at like that golden opportunity. And just,
yeah,
like,
it's pretty
strange.
The pandemic and COVID was terrible, but if it gave us one thing, was a lot more free time. And these videos take a lot of time to edit, so having nothing to do and all the time in the world to just edit, which is kind of what I enjoy doing, did give me a lot more time to do that. And yeah, I agree, people were cooped up, so there was a lot more people who are looking for Commander content, and CDH content specifically was really growing a lot at that time for some reason. So we did hop onto the wave at, I think, at a good time.
Yeah. It would even have been a lot different if we started in March or April too, right? Yeah. Like, it was the fact that we started in February, just before everything happened, that like it timed out nicely where we were already there for when people were ready to search CEDH into YouTube.
Yeah, we had already filmed like 2 or 3 episodes by the time the pandemic hit. So once the pandemic hit, like, I already had just like stuff to edit right away, and we went right into it.
Oh, not bad. That's pretty good. Like, yeah, I can say for myself, like, on the whole thing of like the pandemic stuff, was kind of weird, because like I had a job transition in the last like 3 years now, but like I was working in a prison system at the time.
Yeah.
So like seeing the change of that stuff, and like no one has anything to do or anywhere to go, and I'm just like, oh, this is like a normal everyday for us here. But yeah, like,
yeah,
I could say for myself, like, the content that I was looking up at that time, it definitely, that's when I found you guys too and stuff. So like for me last year when we were at MagicCon Minneapolis, just to run into you guys, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is going to be really good. And then, like I said, just the offshoot question of being like, hey, we're just part of this podcast. You guys want to come talk with us? So.
Yeah, sure. We love hopping on, doing stuff like this.
Yeah,
great.
Glad we were able to make it work. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, other than that though, like, I guess like, so we should start with, cause like we talked about, like, you got into, the right time, right moment and stuff like that. But like prior to that though, what we're kind of looking at is like, what was your guys' inspiration like for going into Magic and then leading you to this point of competitive Commander play and stuff?
Yeah. You want to talk about your journey?
Yeah. So I guess I started playing in high school when I had a bunch of other friends that were getting into it. And I had always been looking for a TCG to play throughout like my entire life. After playing like Yu-Gi-Oh growing up, I had wanted a good one. And I couldn't find one for years. And then I got hooked in high school when a bunch of my friends were playing. And then it wasn't until a couple years later, like in college, that I actually started playing like my first PPTQ and started to get more into like watching the Pro Tour and like making sure I had an actual modern deck instead of like this kitchen table kind of standard deck based around cards that had just come out.
Yep.
And kind of from there, it skyrocketed.
Yeah, I started Innistrad actually around the same time as Cameron, except we didn't know each other until much later. I'm a little bit older than him, so I was in college when you were in high school, I think. Mm-hmm. So I picked it up then, and I played mostly Standard, and then Modern, and then Legacy, and then kind of the older formats. And then I didn't get into Commander. I was always a little bit into Commander, but I had gotten out and wasn't super interested until I met up with a buddy, Tyler, actually, who I ended up living with, who is on the Play to Win channel. Yep, on there all the time. He played a lot of Commander, so I was kind of giving it more of a shot to play with him and his group. And then over time just developed. I'm a competitive player, so I'm always looking at what's the best thing to do in Commander, and eventually found CEDH and just kind of fell in love. And realistically, Play to Win started because I was looking for an excuse to play more CEDH. Like, I really couldn't find a real group that was actually interested in playing at the time. So I just got my friends to say, hey, we play Commander. I will proxy out 4 CEDH decks. Will you play them with me? And then we'll film them. And that was like the way to basically like start actually playing. Like, I was playing, like I would go to a competitive Commander night at my local game store. Yep. And everyone else was on casual decks, but we all paid $5 to join. And I said, hey, we paid $5. I have a powerful deck. Do you mind if I play it? And when they would say yes, I would play them with the CDH deck and I would win very quickly. And then I'd say, okay, I have a casual deck. Do you want to play against that next? And we would play against them after that. So really, Play to Win started because I wanted an excuse to play more actual CDH against actual CDH decks.
Oh, no, that's understandable. I think that's probably like, take it from me as like of the group that's like very into competitive stuff. Like, I mean, I get where you're coming from, because like that was like, for me, that's like one of the harder transitions of like taking a step back from being competitive now, being a dad and stuff. So I think I can understand where you're coming from with that. I think it's great, but I agree 100%. Like, you paid $5 for these tournaments, or you pay, like, there should be a part of it that people have to come sit down and go, well, there are prizes on the line. Like, I kind of want that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think they all understood that. They just didn't have CDH decks. Yeah. And they were able to bring out their strongest casual decks, and they would play Atraxa and these very, you know what I mean? So they got to get their kicks in as well. But yeah. I always want to make sure, like, hey, this is like basically a CDH deck. And at the time, I didn't have the powerful cards, and we weren't doing proxies at the time. So there were some price things on it, but it was more or less, I was bringing Timna Thrasios to all of the local Commander nights, and it was a CDH deck.
Yeah.
So leading up with Commander play, like, Dylan, you said that you did video recording, that's how you wanted to do that. Are you a video, like an video audio engineer by like trade, or is that just kind of like the backup hobby that you...
I actually recently just quit my job. I was a video editor for years. I went to school for electronic media, which is the name of my major, which is basically video production. I went to community college before that for audio production. And then I was like outside of school for a couple years before I found a job. I was doing like freelance work for a lot of real estate agents and stuff like that. Eventually found my most recent job, which was a local video production company. So we did local commercials and stuff for the hospitals, and did videos for just local businesses and stuff like that. And then recently, Play to Win has been doing well enough that I have been able to move to this as my full-time job. So now Play to Win is what I do for work. But yeah, video editing is my history, kind of from like being in bands when I was younger and wanting to make music videos, and then wanting to make music videos and recording bands with that audio degree kind of turned into wanting to make other types of videos. And Magic is what I do with all my free time ever since all of that. So Magic, eventually they just combine them two together.
That is pretty crazy. So in high school doing, wanting to record music videos and stuff. That was just like the thing that was in there. And this was before Magic for you. And
yeah, at the time I was playing like Pokemon competitively, trading card game. That was kind of in my like later years of high school, I was playing that, and then went from Pokemon trading cards to Magic by college.
Gotcha. That's very, I like that. Like audio video engineers. That's a, I always appreciate that, because I was going to college for audio engineering and stuff back in the day. I also liked music. I mean, I still like music and stuff. And stuff. It's not like you give up on that. But
I mean, you gave up on something and you opened a door to new possibilities and other stuff to do, too. So, I mean, it all works out.
Yeah. How do you find the collaboration of that it worked out for taking your interest in videos to make magic content?
What was the question?
Like you had video and edit, video audio editing, like you're working with cameras and audio equipment and stuff, and then just like magic was there as well. And it's like other people, there's been a lot of other contents and stuff with magic players, but at that time it's just like, let's make them both together. Let's record my friends playing these games. You were saying competitive. I guess this is a little side note on that main question. Were you wanting to record them to like watch your games back to see if you saw any mistakes that you all made?
No, it was very much because I wanted to make videos. I think at the time, Casually Competitive had just came out. There were a CDH YouTube channel for a while, and I had already been watching like the Spike Feeders and
Laboratory Maniacs
at the time. Those are the other two ones that I was watching. And then once I saw Casually Competitive, I kind of like saw like, oh, like other people can do this too. And if other people can do it, I can do it because this is what I do for work. So like, if this is possible, which made obvious by like seeing the third channel, I'm like, okay, this seems like something that can be done. I want to kind of just do my version of it because I had an idea that the way that I could do it would be like interesting to watch. And I'm glad that we were able to like commit on that because originally it was going to be a little bit different. It was going to be more like
a sports center like a, kind of thing.
Yeah, like a sports casting. Like we were going to comment on the game lives. But then when we did that, we realized there's just like a lot of times there's nothing to say because the way I had edited it, I just include all of like the sounds of everyone talking because I didn't want it to be too dull. So it kind of just kind of evolved into this like super fast paced version of the game. But yeah, just seeing that other people were doing it and then knowing that I have a video background kind of made me feel like, yeah, they can do it. I can do it. And I think I can do it good.
That's how it worked out for me then, too. He was at my place when he said, I kind of want to start a Magic the Gathering YouTube channel. And I always had wanted to, but I had no editing skills or any equipment at the time. So I figured if anyone's coattails, if I could ride, it would be Dylan's. Yeah. I was like, hey, you're going to need a co-host. You need someone else that's going to have like that, your performance aspect to them.
Yeah.
And I kind of wedged my way in there, but it's worked out. I too now am full time. He's taught me a lot about editing as well. So like I handle all things with our podcast and everything like shorts related with the podcast too. So it's really been an awesome experience to grow like a bunch of other skills that I never had before too that I now do.
Yeah. Cam was a musician, is a musician also. And I think that's a big reason why we're like decent at talking on camera. Part of it is like we're used to being the entertaining thing. Yeah. You know, I think like that
being
that
in front of an
over.
Audience isn't as scary as it was.
Yeah, definitely.
That's crazy that you both like music. So another side question then with this is like, what's the genre of music that you all listen to? If you like opened up your Spotify, your iTunes, what is your on repeat right now? What are y'all listening to?
Mine's a lot of metal and hardcore. Cameron's is much different.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more like electronic. I've been listening to a lot of the Knox recently. They're pretty freaking great.
Yeah, my favorite band of all time is like the Misfits and Slipknot. But then I also listen to CU Space Cowboys, one that I've been listening to a lot recently.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, that's good range of music there.
Yeah.
Cameron has long hair, so I think everyone assumes that he also listens to heavy music because they see stuff in the background of my stuff.
And the play to win aspects, a lot of the aesthetics is a little bit more on like the metal side too. So I kind of get lumped into that, but you would not see a lot of heavy metal on my Apple Music or anything.
Although when I put it on, he is a good sport about it. He does like it. He'll bob his head.
I appreciate music. Yeah. I'm at a point in my life where like I'm liking bands less and I'm liking music more. This is a whole other side tangent. Like this, I'm having a new appreciation for jazz for that way. Like musicians that can improvise over a form is much more important to me than what a song sounds like and what the words to a song are or mean.
Interesting.
It's more, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that does. It's more the feel aspect of how it moves people in a different way and everything else. I get that because like that's been my issue of growing up. Like because I have Matt and then Garrett, who's also in the cast, that like they're very into music and bands, knowing knowledge, like all that stuff. And like for me and like our other best friend that we have too, that they all know these bands. They always ask questions. Hey, have you heard these guys before? I'm like, I don't know who those are, but I bet you if you play their music, I'll like it. But I understand that because, like, to me, like, music to me has always been growing up and, like, I was in choir and jazz choir and band and all that stuff, too. But, like, I never was, like, I didn't care about who was doing it. I just, like, if it sounded good and made me feel something, like, I just like it. So, like, I totally get you with that. It's all about that sometimes.
The theory behind it, I think, is much important. Yeah.
Agreeable. So, no, that's cool. That's pretty awesome. Like Matt's been saying, too, like, you know, with Dylan's background history of like what he went for schooling and stuff, and like even you guys talking about the music and stuff and like how you've integrated this into your podcast show and everything, and as well as, or I should say, sorry, YouTube channel, you've integrated it more, your podcast is more about talking about things like we do. But I think it's awesome, and it's really enjoyable to see that, because, like, I'll tell you, like, one of my memories is, like, being in college. Like, one of the things is when I got into dubstep for the first time, and, like, and when I first started playing the new Mirrodin, we finally went back there again, and, like, when I saw everything with Mirrodin coming back, and, like, all the artifacts and the machine stuff, and, like, Tezzeret really got a front and center picture of him, of what they kind of showed him off with the blue black coloring, and I was like, in my head, I just had a lot of, like, dubstep music in my mind about it, and, like, there's this one song called Just Sunlight, and, like, it's all I listen to constantly, and just that's all I thought about all the time with, like, anything to do with, like, Mirrodin. I was like, this seems like a plane that would have just this kind of sound. And I was like, man, this is just
insane. I could totally imagine an edit with, like, Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, and, like, the sunlight hurts my eyes going on
yes,
in the background.
Yeah.
Love that song.
Exactly. Oh, man, that's great. And it's just, that's, like, to me, like, that was, like, the hit where I'm, like, there. And then later on, like, you know, Skrillex and stuff. And I'm like, I was like, I never realized it, but I love EDM. I love that sound stuff so much more. So, like, when I find that too in, like, other band stuff as well, and like we always say, this is such side tangent stuff we get out, but, like, that's the truth though. Like, that's, it's a piece that it grows, and I think that's a big thing. Like, sometimes as Magic players, we forget to talk about that, like, you know, how much other stuff of media, like, really pushes us into this game even more, you know. So, like, that's a part too that I think is amazing. Like, because that's a question, like, sometimes I'd have sitting around with my friends and stuff before, like, do you ever, like, just have music playing in your head when you're playing a game and wonder, like, what it would be like on a battlefield and stuff? Or, like, how would you portray this into a movie? You know, it's like, so it's, I love it. Like, I love that you guys brought that up even, because, like, that's some things, like, for me, like, I just think about randomly too. And it's just, you know, I like it. I think it's cool stuff.
But. Yeah, definitely. I put a lot of thought into the music selection of our videos so that when the ad nauseum is cast, there's going to be a breakdown, or there's going to be a solo, or at the beginning of the game, it's going to sound like a Lord of the Rings adventure.
Yep,
or there's a lot of thought putting into the specific music choices.
One of my favorite things that Dylan does is manipulate music in Play to Win videos. If you have not focused on the music in Play to Win videos, I highly recommend it, because he makes it so entertaining.
I do. I'm gonna get Matt probably more into this, because, like, this is going right up his alley about, like, music and stuff. So, like, this will get him going even more with your guys' channel and everything. And, like I said, I've been talking about you guys for a while now. And just, like, I was just thinking to myself, like, I don't understand how Matt hasn't picked up on this, because, like, the music in this is great.
I've been
when I come over to do narration, he has all the music in already. So that's the first time that I'm watching the game.
Okay.
It's all already cut up. So there are a lot of times where, like, a transition will happen, someone will cast a spell, and the music changes to, like, the perfect thing. And I, like, ball up in the fetal position here and just go, it's too good, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
Can play on the emotions. Do you produce the music then for all of your...
No, I get it from Epidemic Sound, which is just a website where you can get YouTube music. And sometimes I'll shift the pitch, or I'll change the speed of it, or a lot of times I'll just, like, cut it at certain times and match it up and sync it with another song, or I'll, like, kind of extend how long we're playing so that it lines up with the music a little bit. But all the music is already pre-made and stuff. But yeah, Epidemic Sound.
Gotcha.
Cool. So, like, aside, so we gotta keep moving, because, like, otherwise I can tell already, you guys and us, like, we would be here for 3 hours if we could, but we all got lives, we all got things we gotta do. So, like, let's move on to something a little more of a question that some of our viewers would definitely want to know is that, you guys develop and you make the content, do everything with Play to Win on a competitive level, but the idea is more like, in reality for you guys, what do you prefer more between your casual commanders to actually playing competitive mostly, you know, like we all know what our front side of things are, but, like, what's your back side of that card? Like, what do you really like more? What do you like the most?
I guess competitive formats I tend to like more. If it's not CEDH, it's probably Modern that I'm playing. I guess I do like draft, but I don't really get together in, like, casual ways to draft. That's more like I'm playing on Arena. Like, I spent money on gems. I want to actually try to do well with this thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so most things that I play tend to be more of a structured format, which I guess I don't want to say that casual EDH is not a structured format. It has a ban list and it has guidelines and rule zero and stuff like that. But I tend to like when everyone's on a much more obvious playing field in general. I think Limited does a good job of that. I think Modern and CEDH both have those expectations as well. So That's kind of my preferred way to go.
Okay.
Yeah, I mainly agree. CDH is my first and foremost and favorite format. It's what I play the most. But a lot of what I play on CDH is like for the channel or at conventions or out and about with other people. Besides that, Cam and I play Modern. Like you said, we play on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I play Modern like the most after CDH. After that is Casual Commander. I have like 7 casual decks, but I'm not making any more. I'm sticking to these 7 forever. No more ever again. I do like Legacy and Vintage, but I don't really get to play those formats with a ton of people. I get to play them a couple times a year. Yeah. There's just not a ton of people playing. CDH is still the format that I play the most. I just play it so much for Play to Win. Outside of it, I'm more likely to play Modern than I am to play Casual Commander, probably.
We're trying to find more ways to sneak like 60 card nights in instead of it's 100 card nights in.
If you get a good group of casual players, it can be great. But like Cam said, if one person's a little bit at a different level too often, or if one person is, we're not playing the same power level of decks, it can get a little lopsided pretty quickly. And I like the game of Magic so much. I want it to be like a game.
You want the thrill. You want the experience. You want the reason why we all show up to the table, pretty much.
Yeah, is to play the game.
I like the idea behind a format, like decks that you would see a metagame. I like the idea behind that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, like, on a side part about talking about different formats, like, what are your guys' thought about Canlander?
We actually just recorded Canlander.
We did, yeah.
Oh, good. Because I'm in the boat right now that I'm trying to convince my fellow co-hosts and other people I know to start playing Canlander, because I do love the concept of Canlander a lot. Because you get a little bit of the...
I like the idea of like having a Canlander deck. Like, I don't know how much I'd be able to dedicate like my free time into like keeping up with the Canadian Highlander and like changing my deck based on the format, but I would proxy up a Canlander deck just to have one.
Yeah. It seems like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Canlander seems like kind of a fairish format. Is that correct?
I would say so. The way that like Ben Wheeler and I can't remember who the other person off the top of my head right now that kind of like started the rule setup for everything. But like the way they did it was just like have that point system. So like you value things of what they took from the ideas of Commander and how what was seen as like such a powerful combo setup or centric focus and everything. And like the breakdown of the point system is just so that you can like kind of control the unfairness you find in like some Commander setups, because you know we only have what we have on a ban list or rules zero talk anyways. But then the other part of it is that like they designed that list so that it pushes like other philosophies of how to build decks and stuff too. So like that's the whole concept. Like the question I was asked one time when I brought it up to somebody was like, well, I just don't understand like how a Thassa's Oracle is the same level as a Black Lotus. Like they don't do the same thing. I was like, you clearly don't understand speed or the understanding of a combo sometimes. So I'm like, there's a reason why they're at 7 points. So that's how it works. But like I think like you said, you're 100% accurate on the idea that it is it's a much fairer format in how you play. And like, once again, you're bringing to the table what it is. There's no side deck. Like you just play the game then.
And like, that was kind of the vibe that we got. And for me, I like combo stuff. I like powerful things. I like doing the broken thing. So it did feel a little bit like almost underpowered. Like Mana Leak was a good card and Mana Leak isn't even good enough for Modern. So that was kind of like confusing to me, but they were fun games. They were like, there was a decent back and forth and I definitely could see that. It just felt a little bit almost like, it's weird to say like a format with Black Lotus could feel too fair, but that is kind of what it felt like. It felt like the decks were like standard decks almost.
It's
in
kind
a strange
of funny
way
how that works, because I too like prefer to do some more broken stuff.
Yeah,
like, I do like Canlander. I'm not trying to say like I don't.
No, no,
like
yeah, 100%.
Like Vintage Cube is my absolute favorite format. If I had to pick a format, it would be the Vintage Cube. And like I just feel like when I'm comparing the power level between that and Canadian Highlander, like Canadian Highlander does exactly what it's supposed to do, but it's just not the same as Vintage Cube. Kind of broken.
Yeah.
Is all.
Yeah, I always compare it to the idea of like when I explain to people what it is like it's like the lower and better aspects of like your Commander EDH type of format mixed with the concepts of things that you find in Legacy and Vintage itself. So like your deck structure is still thought process wise is 60 cards, but you have more room to play with because you have up to 100 cards. So kind of that mentality, I guess. So.
And I do got a question for both of y'all here. So you play Modern and stuff. Like how often, if you're thinking about Modern, do you try to like incorporate that into CEDH and stuff? Like if you see the Yawgmoth decks and stuff, it's like, oh, can I make this Yawgmoth combo really fucking kick ass in CEDH or even like with Indomitable Creativity or something like that? Like how do you like does your brain work in that kind of manner? Do you look at it that way, or is this like separate modern, separate CEDH?
Yeah, very infrequently am I trying to take what I'm doing in modern and putting in it in CEDH. I feel like what makes the things that I like to do in modern good is that I'm not playing against a bunch of other opponents. I'm a big Jund player. Thought seizing people is not really what I want to be doing in CEDH. And neither is scamming people either, really. So it's more the other way around, where I feel like I'm thinking, is there like a really powerful thing in CEDH that could equate to modern is more likely a line of thought that I would have.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. As I definitely will, if I see something powerful, I'll definitely think about it for CDH, but it's very unlikely that I'll try it in CDH unless I think it would be good. What the formats are after are two very different things. Modern is so much more about playing the one player, playing the tempo, playing against just this one individual, or CDH, it being three players means that the crossover really doesn't happen a ton.
Color pie thing is also like interesting. Like the Yawgmoth decks in Modern work out so well because you get to play Young Wolf. And I have seen CEDH Yawgmoth decks in CEDH. Wow, that was a well put together sentence, Cam.
It's okay.
But I know what those decks do, and it's just it feels like I would feel better coming into a CEDH game with a modern Yawgmoth deck than I would with a CEDH Yawgmoth deck.
If Yawgmoth was Golgari, it would probably be closer to good
decks. Probably,
I think it would be like a reasonable deck. Although its combo is Yawgmoth and two other cards, right? Yeah. Like it needs two Young Wolves, which would work in CEDH.
You need two undying creatures with Yawgmoth to really get the chain going.
Yeah. Wow, I'm surprised that's even good in modern. Holy cow.
But if it was Golgari, I'd have a much better chance in CDH. Yeah. It being mono black stinks. Yeah.
Yeah.
How often do you think of when talking about like the repetitiveness in it, where you need like two of a card for the Yawgmoth? It just dawned on me, like, you know, we have Ren's Resolve, and what was the one that was like Ren's Resolve but before Ren's Resolve?
Oh, and Crimson Vow.
Yeah, whatever that one is.
Reckless Impulse.
Yeah. So how, right? As CDH focused players, how do you feel about like a reprint that's like the same card just with a different name, so that way you can have that repetition of a card that's like really good? Not saying, you know, Ren's Resolve or
Reckless Impulse,
like to that level and stuff of a card, but like getting more like having a second spell pierce or something like that, like,
or a Molten Duplication and a Twin Flame instead of now having to play like Twin Flame and Heat Shimmer now, right?
Yeah. I love when it's like stuff like Molten Duplication and Twin Flame, because I love when it's like an upgraded version. I do get a little bit annoyed if it's an exact reprint with another name, but they normally don't do that for actual powerful cards. They'll do that for just like draft things where it doesn't matter quite as much. That kind of annoys me because like that card is always what that card is. If it's the exact same, it should have the same name. But either way, for CDH, I love it when there is a new version of a card that we already have and I get to either replace it or add it to what that card does. For CDH, that's great.
Yeah, a lot of times what it does is just replacing it. Like, you're not necessarily trying to put, like, the fifth and sixth copy of an effect in your deck, because you have so many tutors in 90% of the decks that are out there that you don't need that many. You can still just play one or two and then still be able to find it pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with that. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I guess that's the other thing too to ask is like so the difference on like how you play CDH versus regular casual play of it and stuff is like, at what point do you guys like look at a deck and go like, this is too many tutors? Like, for example,
I don't know if that exists.
I know it's a question to think about.
Maybe if like you don't have like enough interaction. I guess if we're talking about like CEDH specifically, like if you are significantly lacking on ways to protect you and like all you're doing is just spending your time looking for other cards, I guess maybe that's it. But
I don't think we have hit a number of too many tutors yet. I think as long as you have all of the 1 and 2 mana tutors that you can put in your deck, that's the amount that you should have, all of the ones that are 1 and 2 mana. And then as long as you have like no more than 2 3-mana and higher tutors.
And even then, we're starting to get a little sketchy.
Maybe 3. I technically, my Francisco Crom list plays Praetor's Grasp, and it plays Beseech the Mirror.
And it plays the
Final Watch that finds 2 cards, 1 into your hand, 1 to the graveyard.
Right, but that's a 1-card win condition with your commander, so that doesn't count.
So that doesn't count. So if you're playing 3 or more 3-mana tutors, that's too many.
That's
play
you
2 of those.
Start raising your eyebrow.
2 of those, and then as many 1 and 2 mana tutors, basically, as you can have.
As you can.
Yeah, okay. I think that's the amount for me.
Yeah, no. I mean, because that's the conversation some people have with, like, some play groups I've been in where they talk about, like, there's just too many tutors to put in this deck and stuff. And it's like, well, I mean, you pick what you need to pick, guys. Like, it's okay. But, like, I asked this question though specifically because I did push like my Tesserator commander deck that I had originally when I first built it was, I had the question someone asked me posing like, why don't you have any counterspells in this? And I'm like, well, why do I need counterspells? I'm just going to get all my answers in and I don't care what you counter because it doesn't matter to me.
Just like, tutor for something else.
I'm just going to tutor for something else and get what I want anyway. So why does it matter? So
that's fair.
I think
counterspells are efficient where tutors are a little bit time consuming, but yes. I see what you mean. Yeah.
So it's just, like I said, it's just trying to find the right balance of things. But yeah, so then like this then goes into another question that's also great too to ask is like recently within the past week, we've had a lot of stuff with Magic Online trying to up more player base into Commander. And like, they're also talking about the moving of the ideas of like competitive Commander to like have leagues and stuff on Magic Online. So like in a world where like the debate has asked like, well, how does competitive Commander function when a majority of it is based on proxies? Because if you want high power play, the cards that cost a lot of money and paper, you're probably not going to buy them. You're going to play with them to test and everything else. So how does it survive when you move it over to the online version of it?
Yeah, that's true. I think how it survives is it doesn't take anything away from what already exists. Proxy tournament CDH is still going to exist in full. That's not going anywhere. So just because there's now the addition of Magic Online and the addition of Wizards supporting CDH tournaments down the line, that's just like an extra thing that's added to our community, not really anything that's going to take away from what we got. Like the proxy tournaments, from what I understand, are still going to happen. As long as they're still going to happen, they're going to grow every time. So I don't think it takes anything away. It just adds more options and ways to play CDH. The main thing that it changes is different metas are going to look a little different. Proxy-free tournaments are going to look a little bit different than no proxy tournaments. And Magic Online, there are certain combos that just take a long time to click all the way through. And it's going to be that people are not going to want to play those type of decks. So that's something to pay attention to.
Not only that, but not every card is available on Magic Online. The full-out cards, I think, aren't available on Magic Online. So like, there's other...
That's correct.
I think that it would hold Magic Online CEDH back more than anything else. If there's any place to play budget-friendly CEDH where you can still play all the cards you want to, it would be Magic Online, right?
Yeah.
Like where historically all of the cards are significantly cheaper and you never had to pay $1,000 for certain things. And even like Black Lotus is relatively inexpensive for what a Black Lotus should be, right?
Yeah. In a comparison level, yes.
Yeah, so like if anything, I'm less concerned about like the proxy side because of MTGO. Because I mean, if you really want to play CEDH like that, I think that's still going to be a good investment to make. I think like Dylan said, it's only going to be positives for the community, and especially once we get those other cards into the client and we can play everything that CEDH actually has to offer, then I think we'll really be cooking with gas.
Yeah, I think for us though, we are sticking mainly to proxy paper CEDH, especially for content. I don't really play a lot of Magic Online. I like Magic cards because I like the papers in my hand. So for me, Magic Online Arena is just, it's not my shtick. I know it's a great resource to have. And I'll probably go back to it. I've tried it before. I've bought laptops specifically for it, but over time, I eventually just kind of forget about it for Paper Magic. I prefer that.
Yeah. Paper Magic, in my opinion, is always going to be the preferred way to play Magic. And sometimes Paper Magic even means by printing them out on a piece of paper and then cutting them up and then sleeving them up with a real card behind them.
But
that's always going to be the preferred method of play for me, just in general.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah. Totally. It's good to hear that from other people and stuff. And like, and even like for you guys too, your big name, you know, stars in this world that we live in of the community of Magic, even though you maybe some days don't think you are.
We're Z list, I like to say, all the way down on the Z list.
Well, I'll say for us, comparative, you guys are pretty high up there. We're just some classic schmucks from North Dakota. So
I would argue you all made it there. Cam, you were on Shuffle Up and Play and stuff, and you did your fucking awesome Ad Nauseam.
You did win that game too.
I did.
On Jund Ad Nauseam.
On Jund Ad Nauseam. I haven't put Rograk Ikra back together. I took it apart after that because I have a perfect record after appearing on Shuffle Up and Play.
We built the Rograk Rayhan deck. You still have to build that, I think.
Well, that's different from Rograk Ikra.
So yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, I feel like you should build it. I don't know what's taking you so long.
Nah, I don't know either.
Too many other
That was a great experience. He's great. He's an awesome person to have. We couldn't have anyone better in the community than the professor. He's just amazing.
No, Brian's, I love Brian's content. Like, cause I feel like too, like the best part about Brian too is like in the sense of he definitely puts on a great show for his content he creates, but I feel like he's really laid back somehow compared to his professor persona, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I feel that.
So, but yeah, no, he is great. He's one that I've been watching since he started too. And like, yeah, I enjoy it. So, I just lost track of where I was at because we're enjoying Magic so much and talking about it. Matt, where are we at? You're supposed to keep me on track here.
I am. So we got diving in more into the Magic related questions here.
Yeah.
Then
hit some of these off quick so we can get back to normal chat.
Okay. So when it comes to the colors and stuff, like CEDH players, do you have like a color specifically that you resonate with, or are you just more ambiguous and you're just like, I'm going to do anything? Cam, you're saying you're Jund. Is that like very hardcore, like Jund him to death till the end? Or are you going to be like, nah, I'm going to Selesnya this shit up too?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I feel like the Jund persona comes out a lot more in 60 card decks. Really modern, I guess, really. If I have the opportunity to play Legacy, I really want to be in blue. When I'm drafting Vintage Cube, I'm always in blue. Even if I'm just playing one blue card, there has to be some blue. Otherwise, my deck's bad. Or in CEDH, I also feel most comfortable with blue in my deck. So it is weird how I spent 10 years being Jund guy at an LGS, and now all of a sudden, like the past four, I'm finally playing more blue, and it's, what have I been missing out all this time?
I mean, blue is amazing. I'm not going to lie.
Blue is amazing. Yeah. I'm normally like a red-black player. I'm also a Jund guy. I played a lot of Jund, but I'll do a lot of different stuff. Normally, I like to have either blue or black in my deck in kind of any format. I either want the hand disruption or the interaction in 60 card, or in CDH, I want the tutors from black or the blue interaction. I normally want either one of those. When I first started playing Magic, I played a lot of Naya. I haven't revisited Naya type decks in a while, but I still probably would. I'll play anything that's good. I like to have play good cards. That's my main thing.
Yeah. I won't. What's the word I'm looking for?
Discriminate.
I won't do that.
That's the word.
I won't
yes.
do that. Yeah.
But yeah, I'll mainly lean towards red and black stuff mostly.
Okay. To the next question, which is, in the realm of Magic, do you have a favorite legendary character or / planeswalker now, since we do have multiple legendary types that they go off of for story building? What would it be as the person?
You have a favorite?
Mine is Sun Titan. Can that be it?
Sure. Yes.
I don't know I have like a favorite legendary. I'm not really into Magic for the lore. Couldn't tell you a single character trait about any of these people that we're introduced to.
That's fair.
For me, I only judge them based on how they perform in the game. So unfortunately, I can't say like I have a favorite character, like I have a favorite anime character.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose one, it would be Sun Titan.
Yeah, I'm similar way. I don't super care about the lore, but Olivia Voldaren is my favorite card of all time. That would be my favorite. Yeah, Olivia Voldaren is my favorite card.
Okay.
Would you consider them like your pet cards then, kind of? Like, how many decks have you tried to build around these?
None. Zero. Unfortunately, I don't play Olivia in any decks right now.
You even have a vampire.
Even have a vampire deck, and it doesn't even play Olivia, because I play Edgar, and as much as Olivia is cool, she's just, like, not that good. I liked her in Standard at the time when you play, like, one Olivia in your Jund deck. That was great. She was just my favorite thing to pull. Obviously, like now, like some of my favorite cards are like Food Chain is one of my favorite cards, or Necropotence is one of my favorite cards that I'll actively play a bunch. And Edgar Markov is like one of my favorite casual commanders that I've ever built, if you can call him casual. But so there's like certain cards that I have like that are more favorite that I actively play. But Olivia Voldaren will always hold the slot of my favorite card of all time.
When it comes to commander specifically, then when you're sitting at a table, a pod, what is the commander that you don't want to see? I imagine like in CEDH, like there's different variations on different decks. Like you have two, three different ways to make like a Kinnan deck, a couple different ways to make an Urza deck. Are you able to like look at a commander when they set it down? It's like, I don't want to play against that because it could be like this, or this. Or is there like just a negative commander you see and it's like, fuck that one?
Depends on what I'm playing a lot. It depends on what I'm playing. If I'm playing something slow, I don't want to see something fast. And if I'm saying, you know what I mean? So there are certain times where seeing either Rograk, Kinnan, or Timnacrom, like those are probably the three best decks in the format right now. But I don't not want to see them when I play against them. I'll think the same thing about every. I want to play against any CDH deck. There's none that I don't want to see. But against those three specific, I'll probably like weigh that into my mulligan decisions a little bit more. I'll think about that a little bit harder and say like, oh, I should probably look for a way to deal with Kinnan or something like that.
But it's not like I'm angry to play against those decks.
Right. There's no deck that I don't actively don't want to play against. No.
I definitely feel you on that. I'm more on the casual side of Commander. It's like, I'll play against someone's first Sliver deck and stuff, even though everyone in like the casual side is like, oh, fuck Slivers and stuff. But I'm like, I like the challenge. So that brings up a question for me, though. It's like, CEDH is all about like different synergies with cards. Like, you have like blue farm kind of a thing. Is that kind of the same thing? Like, you know, this deck's going to be a blue farm or a food chain combo. Is there one that's like least that you least like to see, where it's like, not because maybe it could be like just a preference of the deck style, the play style of it itself, or it's just like, this is just annoying kind of a thing?
No, I don't really look at it like that. There's nothing that I wouldn't want to see, but I would have a pretty good idea from what I could see from the deck based on like the colors that it's in. But yeah, no, there's nothing that I wouldn't want to see out of a CDH deck.
There's stuff that I know that I won't play well. Like, I know I won't play a Stacks deck well, so I won't play a Stacks deck, but I won't be angry to play against a Stacks deck, I guess, again. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to like shoo any kind of deck away. I really just want to play Magic when I want to play Magic, and I'm going to try to win around whatever you're doing. And there's nothing you can do that's going to annoy me so much that I'll hate you.
That's fair.
Yeah, I agree.
How many games of Magic have you played in a day? Like, what is the most?
Of CEDH or just like Magic period?
Let's just say, let's have them both. If you know CEDH off the top of your head, let's do that. But if you have one where it's like, I did everything in one day and this was the count, I'll take that too.
In Vegas, there was a time where we did 30 games over the course of 3 days, right?
Well, that was Minneapolis. I think we did 26 games in 2 days. So roughly 16 games on the one day, actually.
Yeah. And it was less than next?
A much slower day the next one and only played 10 CEDH games.
Yeah, I want to say that's right. Somewhere around 15 to 16 games of CEDH in a day, and that's a lot.
That was a lot of CEDH.
As far as like 1v1, I've probably played upwards of like 25 or 30 games of like 1v1 Magic, maybe even a little bit more than that in a single day. But in terms of casual games, I don't know that I could get more than 10 casual games done in a day. That's a lot. That sounds
insane.
I don't
know if I could get 10 casual games done in a day. Yeah. I think my at some point I would be like, I'm ready to play another format.
Yeah, I agree. I think the max amount of games for casual in a row would probably be like five, maybe.
That's a good number.
Maybe five. Six is the most that I've done for casual games in a row.
I could be convinced to stay for a six.
I would go for 10.
Did you have snacks?
Yeah.
The snacks, I would stay for a six.
Almost at any time, I would want to stop and eat before that. And by the time we got back to it, I was like, I'm full. You want to watch a movie instead or something? Like, you know what I mean? It just,
yeah.
I'd stand for six, more than six games in a row would be pretty crazy.
I need to pump blood to my legs at some point. Yeah.
Get up, walk around the table, do a couple laps.
Yeah.
When it comes to competitive players, they definitely want to get like a lot of games done and like have good games. And casuals, they're just like casual players just want to like kind of like lumber around a little bit. And one thing I do appreciate about competitive play and watching like your videos or the casually competitive, like they're just so fast paced. When it comes to like the fast pacedness of the game, is that something that like also draws you into competitive Magic? Like,
I think some of that helps with Dylan's editing style, though, too.
Yeah.
I think because it's not like every game of CEDH we play, we're firing off spells as quickly as we're saying them. Like, I am still trying to, like, keep the pace of the game up in, I guess, any format that I'm playing. But I think the editing style that we've gone with has really accentuated how quick these games can go.
I'm a pretty fast player by nature, to a fault sometimes for sure, but I will make decisions pretty quickly. But also, just like how I watch content is I will watch most things at 1.5 times speed or higher, and I wanted to make content that I could watch at its normal pace, which is very rare for me to find. So it was specifically for me, but the whole goal was to make Play to Win as fast as possible, so it doesn't really give you as much time to just like linger on in your thoughts. It's constantly going. So that's definitely been purposeful.
Whereas like we'll sit down at a pod and like actually I might actually spend 5 minutes trying to think of my Underworld Breach line after I've cast that nauseam.
Right? Yeah, we cut all that silence out.
Yeah, all that stuff that nobody, you don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so they can still be at a similar pace to casual games in terms of my play speed, I guess. In terms of how many turns the game is, it might be a little bit different.
Yeah, I would say most CEDH decks games, we can finish in an hour if there's no stacks. If there's stacks, it might take an hour and a half. But without stacks, I would say most CEDH decks will finish within an hour, most games.
Okay. And honestly, our casual games aren't too far off that. They're like an hour to an hour and a half, maybe.
Yeah.
Talking about speed here, and we want to respect your time. We have the last section of the interview here that we call the Quicksilver questions. There's just a few questions that that we'd like you to answer rapid fire fast. And don't think about it. Just be like, we say the question and boom, answer.
Oh, first. Just like how Dylan plays Magic. Okay.
Yeah. Do you pay the one?
No.
Sometimes.
Realistically, yes. It was the first thing that came to mind, though, was no.
Yes. Pineapple on your pizza. Yay or nay?
No.
Yes.
What's the legend?
And barbecue sauce, too.
Oh, God.
Ooh, I'm in on barbecue sauce. I'm with that. What's the largest animal you think you could take in a fight? Like, if you just popped up in the woods with an animal that spawned in front of you, what is the largest one that you think you could take in a fight?
I'm a bobcat. I know by weight, anything under 150 pounds, I can take, for sure.
If it has teeth, I'm screwed. No. Bobcat has teeth? Yeah, but, like, they're a little bit smaller. Like, a 150-pound bobcat would fuck you up. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking of a human. Any human that's 150 pounds.
No, this is an animal.
Yeah, an animal
specifically
is...
Specifically an animal in the woods that has claws and teeth and probably rabies.
50 pounds, then. A 50-pound animal of any ability, I think I could take.
Are you sure? Like, they're, you know, badgers, they don't weigh that much either.
But you could kick a badger. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? I would never
also,
kick a badger.
You can also...
I do have a length...
anything that's within advantage. Anything that's in the kicking distance that I could kick before they get to me, I feel very confident against. Okay.
I will say a fair side thing. When I had a different job in college and stuff, I went into one of these grain mills, like things that we had to drop off some stuff because I used to take care of like dealing noxious weeds and like spraying and stuff. And there was a poster on the little wall there that had a picture of a badger that got pulled into a baler.
Jesus.
And I asked about it. I was like, this is a real picture right here? And the guy's like, yeah, that badger's still alive too. And I'm like, okay, they're tough. I'm
maybe
not,
I couldn't take a badger, but
I don't want to fight. I'm just saying,
badgers
I'm throwing it out.
51
there.
Pounds, I'm pretty sure.
They
so.
Are. That's too right? much. They're yeah. monsters. can you hear the questions? Shower or bath?
Shower.
Shower.
Okay.
Gross. I'm sitting in a tub of my dirty water.
And the final one, finish this sentence. Wake me up.
Before you go-go?
When September ends. We're different.
Yeah,
all right.
We are different.
All right.
Yeah.
That is a very good golf clap to end with that. So
thank you.
Dylan, Cam, thank you so much. Give us your socials. Let us
sure,
let
yeah.
know
you
where
can follow us at PlayToWinMTG on all social media for the most part.
And at CamToWin on Twitter if you feel like it.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Awesome. And with that, Magic Folk, we will catch you next time.
Peace.
Congratulations! You made it to the end of this week's episode of This Week in MTG. Your listenership means so much to us. Make sure to follow the podcast over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or on the podcatcher of your choice. You can watch the live stream recording of the podcast every Monday night at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time over on YouTube and twitch.com/thisweekinmtg. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can send us a message to our Facebook, Twitter, or send us an email at thisweekinmtg@gmail.com. For all these links and more, check out our link tree at linktr.ee/thisweekinmtg. Thanks so much!
Ball up in the fetal position here and just go, it's too good, I can't handle it.